Good afternoon, everyone. This is David Foster, the Executive Director of the Blue-Green Alliance. For those of you who may not know us, we are a national strategic partnership of 10 of America's largest unions and 4 of its most influential environmental organizations with 15 million members and supporters around the country. This week marks the 40th anniversary of the passage of the Clean Water Act, one of America's landmark pieces of environmental legislation. Looking back 25 years ago, only a third of our nation's waters were then safe for fishing and swimming. Wetland losses were estimated at about 460,000 acres a year, and agricultural runoff was resulting in the erosion of billions of tons of soil and deposits of large amounts of phosphorus and nitrogen in our waterways. The Clean Water Act and subsequent legislation reversed that decline in the quality of our nature's waters. But today, new strategic investment in water infrastructure, meaning our pipes, treatment plants, sewage, and stormwater treatment, is critical if we're going to ensure ample clean water for our communities and economy. And so today, on the anniversary of the Clean Water Act, it's time to reverse the dangerous trend of cutting funding for the Clean Water State Revolving Fund and the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund. We all use and rely on fresh water countless times each day, more than we realize. The average family, for instance, of 4 uses 400 gallons of water per day. And most Americans make the assumption that we have and will continue to have sound infrastructure to ensure ample clean water is available anytime it's needed. But in many communities across the country, we're already experiencing the water-related effects of climate change as our communities confront increased flooding, periods of drought, and severe weather events. In Duluth, Minnesota, my home state, for instance, this summer in one 24-hour extreme rain event, flooding cost over $190 million of infrastructure damage. The potential impacts of climate change on the nation's waterways include flooding in low-lying areas, loss of routes for transportation and water infrastructure, and the spread of contaminants. You add in the fact that the American Society of Civil Engineers gave both the nation's drinking water and wastewater systems a D- on their 2009 report card for America's infrastructure, and we realize that's a dangerous combination. So improving our water quality by updating an aging infrastructure system should be a strategic priority for America in order to protect public health and create jobs. Mismanaging our sewer overflow, which occurs when rain overwhelms combined sewer systems that collect and treat both stormwater and sanitary sewage, poses a water contamination threat. Our water infrastructure is old, and we're wasting water and money every day from leaks and water pipe breaks. We undoubtedly need substantial upgrades and investments in the capture, treatment, and mitigation of stormwater to prevent these contamination threats. Now, the silver lining of this problem, of course, is that fixing it will create thousands of many needed jobs. Estimates show that each national investment of $1 billion would create more than 20,000 jobs. The Clean Water State Revolving Fund has a proven track record. It was established through the Clean Water Act of 1987, and it's created between 1.4 and 2 million jobs over those 24 years. Investing in water infrastructure has the potential to stimulate and support many other economic sectors, including construction, manufacturing, transport, and even tourism. It's also important during this period of high unemployment that we include strong domestic sourcing provisions to be part of plans to reinforce our water infrastructure. It only makes sense that if we're using tax dollars to build our infrastructure, we should use American products that are made by American workers. By using American products, we can also ensure that these investments promote our technology and innovation right here in the U.S. so that we're creating quality jobs and delivering the highest benefit to taxpayers in the U.S. economy. Again, here in Minnesota, when we fixed the pipe infrastructure of Duluth, We should be using domestically produced iron ore from off Minnesota's own Iron Range and steel and manufactured goods to help build an American infrastructure that then multiplies the benefits in terms of jobs and money that goes back into our economy. So in conclusion, on this important anniversary, I want to note that once again, addressing environmental problems, not ignoring them, is a valuable opportunity for job creation that we in America can't miss out on. We should invest now to create jobs, reduce waste, improve public health, and leave our children a lasting legacy of clean water and a cleaner environment. And there's no better way to celebrate the anniversary of the Clean Water Act than by redoubling our efforts in that regard. And now I'd like to turn the platform over to Mike Langford, the president of the Utility Workers Union of America. Mike?
All right. Thank you, David. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, David, just a little bit about the utility workers. We represent workers throughout the United States in water and wastewater systems. And these are very highly skilled jobs, dedicated workers that day in and day out make sure that we have safe, clean, reliable water and wastewater systems throughout the country. These are highly skilled jobs. They're good-paying jobs. They're middle-class jobs that can't be offshored. That's some of the important stuff here. And if you look at the benefits of fixing America's old, out-of-date water infrastructure and protecting our water to ensure it's clean, is an opportunity to create thousands of jobs here in America. Day in, day out, as I said earlier, our members make sure that every glass of tap water is crystal clear and that our lakes and waterways are sewage-free. Privatizing our water system is the wrong route to take, given water's role in public health. Economic development, national security, and the quality of life, we shouldn't have to worry if water we're drinking is clean because the private company is in charge of deciding to put profits ahead of our safety. That's a significant role. Even though we do represent workers in the private sector in the water, we still believe that publicly held is the right way to go, that it's just too important to put it into the hands of private enterprise. Also, every $1 billion that is invested in the infrastructure will create more than 20,000 new jobs. That's important. And if you look at the pipelines that are in the ground today, we still have wooden pipelines in the ground. It's amazing to think about the amount of waste that is lost through leakage. And for every gallon that's lost through leakage, that's just that much more energy that is being utilized to clean and to distribute and transmit that water. So you can see the significance and the importance of upgrading these systems. And also, every billion in direct investments results in an estimated $3 billion in economic impact through industries that are directly or indirectly related to building or improving water and wastewater infrastructures throughout our economy. Our nation's construction workers are at the vanguard of building the vital infrastructure necessary. See, this will create a lot of jobs throughout the nation in the building trades groups, but it also creates jobs for more people to operate and maintain the new systems, and then the which will just add over the economy and sustain our communities that we live in. We must make significant investments in upgrades in order to adapt to the effects of climate change. You can see what the droughts have done throughout the Midwest and other parts of the country. I mean, every drop of water out there is vital today. And so we should be taking this very, very serious because this is the new norm, I believe, out there. Maintain access to safe drinking water and adequately treat storm and wastewater. And while doing so, we can create good jobs using American-made steel and iron for manufactured goods. We must ensure that these jobs are good jobs by requiring prevailing wages, provisions, and benefits outlined under the Davis-Bacon Act. And again, as you heard me say earlier, that our folks are on the front lines day out, day in, highly skilled professionals to make sure that we have safe and reliable water. David, that's all I have at this time.
Thanks a lot, Mike. And next, I'd like to call on Jeremy Simons, Senior Vice President of the National Wildlife Federation, another partner in the Blue-Green Alliance. Jeremy?
Well, thanks, Dave. Thanks, Mike. Dave, appreciate the work of the Blue-Green Alliance, the opportunity to be here today. I am Senior Vice President at National Wildlife Federation. National Wildlife Federation is the largest conservation organization in America with 4 million supporters, and last I checked, they all depend on clean water. So it's always good to have an opportunity to talk both about how the environment and the economy move forward hand in hand. We create jobs by cleaning up our water and other natural resources. For 40 years, the Clean Water Act has fostered an historic cleanup of the nation's waters. We've come a very long way from the days of the flaming Cuyahoga River, when our rivers were little more than open sewers. But as Mike and Dave were indicating with their comments, we have much more work to do to restore our nation's waters, and we must not take clean water or the Clean Water Act for granted. If you look over the past two years, for example, five cities on the U.S. side of the Great Lakes, that's Detroit, Cleveland, Buffalo, Milwaukee, and Gary, Indiana, discharged 41 billion gallons of untreated sewage and dirty stormwater into the lakes. Five cities, 41 billion gallons. These discharges pose serious health risks to humans, harm wildlife, and hurt tourism. Combined sewer overflows contaminate the Great Lakes and other areas of the nation with toxic chemicals, dangerous pathogens, and debris that pollute beaches, threaten human health and wildlife, and harm the region's multi-billion-dollar tourism economy, speaking there of the Great Lakes. Strong, effective Clean Water Act pollution controls and efficient and effective water infrastructure are both essential to keeping our drinking water safe, ensuring abundant clean water for agricultural production, and bolstering the robust fishery, tourism, and outdoor recreation industries, and the millions of jobs and billions of dollars they generate. We get an awful lot of benefits from clean water. A little goes a long way. It's also essential that these Clean Water Act protections extend to wetlands, lakes, and streams throughout watersheds, not simply to the rivers and lakes that float a boat. These smaller waters feed a larger system of waters, which communities depend upon for health and economic productivity. We can't adequately protect clean water in America without addressing these watersheds and the wetlands that support them. Protecting wetlands and other water resources in America are becoming even more important in light of the changes going on in our climate. As Mike indicated, one of the most noticeable effects of climate change is the increase in extreme weather events across the country. Both flooding and drought has wreaked havoc on the environment and on communities. And our water supply has been overburdened, and we need better water infrastructure systems to deal with those changes. Decreased precipitation in the western U.S. in particular will have severe effects on water availability and supply. The water is a vital need in America. We need to move forward with water infrastructure improvements to protect our communities and environment and to create good jobs. Improving drinking water infrastructure through investments in water recapture, reuse, and transport will save water and energy, reduce pollution, and create good jobs. We also need to consider some of the benefits of clean water as part of America's great outdoors. America spent $145 billion annually on hunting, angling, wildlife-related outdoor recreation alone, recreation activities that depend upon clean water and healthy fish and wildlife habitat. So let's not lose sight of those benefits as well and all the jobs associated, the millions of jobs associated with outdoor recreation. So in summary, upgrades to our water infrastructure systems and common sense Clean Water Act protections can ensure the integrity of our waters for future generations while protecting our families today. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. And finally, I'd like to call on Russ Breckenridge, the Senior Legislative Representative for another Blue-Green Alliance partner, the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters. Russ?
Thank you. Thank you. The United Association is a proud member of the Blue-Green Alliance, and we always look forward to working with our colleagues in labor and environmental groups to create jobs and protect our environment. For those of you that don't know, the United Association has 320,000 members in the plumbing and pipe fitting industry across our country. The UA is the leader among construction trades unions for maintaining our water systems. Annually, we spend over $250 million a year training our members with the latest techniques and giving them access to the most up-to-date technology to maintain our water systems. Now, as we commemorate the anniversary of the Clean Water Act, it's important that we move away from a reactive strategy to a comprehensive plan to replace our country's crumbling water infrastructure before it's too late. Too often, we wait until a water main breaks or there is a flooding outbreak before we decide to remedy the problem. There are over 240,000 water main breaks per year. Currently, the American Society of Civil Engineers gives our nation's water infrastructure a D-. America needs high-wage, highly skilled jobs now. It's estimated for every $1 billion spent on water infrastructure, it creates 20,000 jobs. It's really a win-win for our country. Not only does it create jobs, it also encourages economic development and promotes public health and safety. For every infrastructure job created, it also leads to 3.7 jobs to the indirect economy relating to supplying and manufacturing. And this isn't just in one area of our country. It's in every state, in every city. Everyone has been impacted by a water main break or a crumbling water infrastructure system. I think that as we move forward, it's important that we maintain strong funding for the Clean and Drinking Water State Revolving Funds, that we do not cut this funding, and that we continue to work with our partners and our leaders in Washington, D.C. and in the states to find innovative ways to finance our water infrastructure system. We look forward to working with all parties involved and congratulate again the anniversary of the Clean Water Act. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Russ. And while we're getting ready to take some questions, let me just also point out to reporters on the phone that we've taken the opportunity of the Clean Water Act anniversary to release the joint Blue-Green Alliance water policy statement of our labor and environmental partners that makes some strategic points about the importance of defending environmental regulations as we go forward, of fully funding the clean water and clean water conservation programs that we've been referencing, also the full funding of the state revolving funds and reverse the trend to cut the funding for those very important federal programs, to create a national registry of water main breaks so that we're far more cognizant of the age and deterioration of our water systems. And finally, that in this era of growing effects of climate change, that we better address the energy-water collisions where the water demand from our energy resources is putting us in direct conflict with the water shortages that are arising in various parts of the country. So, in short, the Blue Green Alliance partners believe strongly in the regulatory framework of the Clean Water Act as a way to go forward in the United States and addressing some critical problems that are now on the horizon as a result of the effects of climate change. As we've said before, the opportunity or silver lining that lies in this problem is that by fixing it in an era of low interest rates, we can rebuild America's infrastructure, put millions of Americans back to work, and deal with these critical problems as well. So, Eric, if there's some questions we could answer, turn it back to you.
The Blue Green Alliance's clean water policy can be found at bluegreenalliance.org/cleanwatergoodjobs. In a moment, I'll open up the media line for questions. Once we take the line out of presentation modes, please state your name and outlet, then ask your question. After you ask your question, the media line will be put on mute until we're ready for the next question or a follow-up question. We'll be going out of presentation mode now. Go ahead.
My name is John Heltman. I'm with Inside EPA. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
My main question is, you know, a lot of these initiatives, you know, funding the SRF, you know, protecting public ownership of water utilities, these things have been around for a while. I'm just wondering what initiatives you guys are thinking to do to enact these, specifically the funding for the SRF, in the current kind of legislative climate. I mean, it's sort of an uphill battle to get money for anything these days. So how are you guys going to do that?
Well, this is Dave Foster. I'll jump in there, and then others may want to follow on as well. I think one of the obvious key things that we want to highlight is that these are problems that we can't duck or dodge or avoid and put off until the future. And so we want to highlight incidents such as took place in Duluth, Minnesota this year, where an outdated, inappropriate infrastructure was literally washed down the hills of Duluth and deposited in Lake Superior. This isn't a question that we can kick the can down the road, and that's something that we want to, strongly drive home to public officials as well as to the American public. This is a problem that we are going to fix in crisis, as we are in Duluth, or it's a problem that we will get in front of by refunding these programs that we currently have at the appropriate level and then engaging in a really substantive discussion about how we create an infrastructure bank in America to get private capital off the sidelines and back at a time of historic low interest rates, where that money is doing nothing, literally paying bank depositors to hold it for them, and gets it back into constructive production, into it addressing this huge infrastructure deficit we have in America, a lot of which is concentrated in our water system. So Mike or Jeremy or Russ, I don't know if either any of you have something to add.
This is Jeremy.
Go ahead. I was just going to say this to Mike Langford, and David, I think you've covered it, and the fact is that, you know, Congress, this is something that they just can't stick their head in the sand on. They have to move and act on these, and this is vital to this nation and its security and just moving forward and bringing new industry back in, because if they don't have water available, it's just, it will slow down the job growth. So I'm just reiterating what David basically said, but I'm in a total agreement.
And this is Russ Breckenridge with the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters, and I would echo what my colleagues have said and also point out that water infrastructure has traditionally enjoyed bipartisan support in Congress, and we look forward to working with both parties to find a solution to this problem.
And Jeremy?
That's good. We can go to the next question.
Okay.
You guys covered it all.
All right. Any other questions? If you're muted, you could press *6 to come off mute. Okay.
This is Jeremy. I could add one point on the budget question since we don't seem to have a big queue here. Of questions, I just want to point out from National Wildlife Federation, we've been watching Congress deal with budgets by stuck in the tough issues and leveling a disproportionately big budget act on conservation programs across the board. And so I think the answer in terms of what we're going to do is we're nearing a we're coming upon a situation where that temptation is going to be there for Congress to, again, duck the big issues and make penny-wise but pound-foolish decisions, to cut water infrastructure projects when we should be instead investing in clean water. And so our job, like everyone was mentioning, is to educate people about what's going on. Because the bottom line is the bipartisan support that is there from communities for creating jobs and for protecting clean water will mobilize as soon as people find out that any efforts to target these projects are unfair. And we want to make sure that there's investment, as everyone else mentioned. But there is that bigger budget situation, and it certainly increases the stakes.
I mean, do you guys think this is, you know, a bit forward looking, but it's I think safe to say, just from a legislative point of view, that it's likely these things won't come to a head until the next Congress. Do you think that a second Obama term will make some of these initiatives easier to push for in the 113th Congress, or more difficult, or conversely, do you think a Romney administration will be receptive to this message, and why? What do you think? How do you think the election might affect your ability to make this sale?
Well, this is Dave Foster. I certainly agree with Russ Breckinridge when he notes that historically these issues around water infrastructure have been bipartisan issues, and certainly when one of these infrastructure collapses happened, it affects the community in a bipartisan way. So I would expect that in a second Obama administration that a certain amount of this reflexive opposition that Republicans have shown to the president's initiatives will drop away, in large part because historically these are not and should not be partisan issues. I think the question of infrastructure generally in the United States is so serious and so affects American quality of life and the conduct of business across the board that there's a very strong infrastructure deficit and a very strong bipartisan recognition of this problem needing to be addressed. As partisan as my home state of Minnesota has become with a Democratic governor and two Republican-controlled houses of the legislature, when this extreme weather event happened in Minnesota, there was a special session of the legislature, and an emergency bonding measure was passed to deal with the problems created there. So I think that there's the capacity, once this election is settled, to move beyond it. I'm a little less certain what will happen were Romney to be elected, because the capacity for some of his programs to be driven by the Republican leadership in the House, should it be maintained, seems to me to open a lot of questions about whether or not he would be able to pursue a bipartisan agenda at this point. But others may have different views on that.
Guess not.
No. Okay. Any other questions?
I don't have any.
All right. Dave?
Okay. Thank you very much. Especially thank you, Mike and Jeremy and Russ, for today's events, and thank all of you from